Today is March 30th. We are recording Megillat Ruth. We're starting today. Right, we've discussed the narrative style of Ruth, where every pasuk but 8 begins with the letter Vav. So too, in Parshas Vayeshev, we will see themes that are shared by that Parsha. Vayeshev is even more dramatic. There's 112 pasukim, and 8 don't begin with the letter Vav. In Megillat Ruth, there are 85 pasukim, and 8 don't begin with the letter Vav. And those are standard deviations that are far different, and far more than other books of Tanakh. Full disclosure, there is one other parsha that has that shifts very high towards Vav, is Parsha Vayetzev. Vayetzev also has not as the percentage of Parsha Vayetzev, but Vayetzev also has an inordinate amount of psukim that begin with the letter Vav. And this implies that when you read something Pasuk Aleph Beis and Gimel, it's very much connected to what's happening in Daf Hei and Vav. A lot of connecting elements from the events one to the other. Put everything together, keep in mind that there is a chain with a lot of links in it, and every piece of that chain needs to be analyzed as part of the story. Okay? Which is what we will do. It's true in the Yosef story, a lot of ironies that come out as a result, and how we will learn the story. Okay? The beginning of the book and the end of the book also remind us of the elements of Parshas Vayeshev, where two boys die in the beginning of Vayeshev, Yehuda's two sons, Er and Onan, and two boys die in the beginning of Rus, Machlon and Chilion. There are two boys born at the end of the story in Vayeshev, Perek Lamed Ches, that replace the two dead children, their parents and Zerah, right? And only one boy is born at the end of our story, because only one of the daughters came back with Naomi. Right? Certainly no reason to perpetuate the name of Chilion, for an obvious reason. There's no wife of Chilion here to perpetuate it with. Got it? His wife Orpah went back to Moab, because I'll say she was the mother of Goliath. See the irony, right? Moab stays with Naomi, and she is the ancestor of David. Orpah goes back to Moab, who does she beget? Mother, great-grandmother, whatever, Goliath. Because I was good at that kind of dichotomy. Okay. Gemilut Chesed in Ruth. The opening line of Megillas Rus is, and I ask you to consider whether what I'm about to tell you is true or not. Listen to the opening line. Ein b'megillah zu lo tumo v'tahara lo iser v'heter v'lo shum halacha. Elo lahagid lecha kocho shel chesed. There is no tumentara, no isubahed, no laws in this book. This book is a story. All you get out of this book is the power of chesed. Do not misunderstand what this means. It's a medrash in Rus Rabba. Rabbi Zeira is the author. Don't misunderstand this. This book is the source for 4 prakim of an incredible amount of halacha. Perk Aleph is the daf Yavamas daf Mem Vav is the source of a ton of Hilchos Geirus. Perk Beis Yerushalmi Peah has a ton of laws that we learn about gleaning and Leket Shikran Peah from Perk Beis of Megillas Rus. Perk Gimel has laws of marriage and yichud. Perek Dalid, laws of Yehula Sodeh, and the laws of Kenyan. There's help. Adurah. Megillas Rus, certainly more than the other 4 Megillos, has much, a ton of halacha. So why does the Midrash begin by saying, you won't find Tumen Torah in this book, you won't find Yisur Neder in this book, you won't find laws in this book, you're going to find the power of Chesed. So, unless the author of this medrash thinks he can pull the wool over our eyes,
Unless he disagrees with all the Gemaras I just mentioned, and of course he doesn't, he's the author of some of them. What it means is that while you may learn halachos from this book, the author of this memra knows this, it pales in importance with the message you get of the power of chesed. So I have to explain. The laws derived from this book is less consequential in the reason for writing the book than the power of chesed. In other words, one of the reasons for writing the book is to teach the power of chesed.
Okay.
For writing Ruth. I'm skipping four for a second because I'm going to go to five. Really, five should have been four here, which is the reason for writing the book. I'll tell you this. This is my interpretation of how to understand Rav Zeira and the Medrash. But there's a Gemara that says something more, even more, more precise. Okay, and I'm going to tell it to you as a pilpul. You all know what pilpul is, right? Let's do this quickly.
Okay. No idea.
Pilpul is like a sophistry, you know, like a something where you start off with something and then
it's an anomaly at the end.
It's not an anomaly, but that involves. But you have to be really concentrating and thinking. It's not going to come so quickly, and it's going to involve a lot of detail. Okay. The last word of this book is David. Right. He's in the told us of Abel told his parents. Parents told his stay with me. Guys, you can go 40 minutes without touching the phone. Right?
And you can.
You can. You can go 25 hours without touching the phone. Or 73 hours next week without touching the phone.
Right?
Okay? So here's what it is. The last word in this book is David. It's clearly the point of the book is to identify King David. Why? We don't have a book identifying King Saul. Because when King David was appointed king, it was a huge movement in Israel, and it's mashma from not just Jerushas, but you still can't even say for Shmuel. It was a huge movement in Israel that says he can't be king. Of course he can't be king. His great grandmother was a Moabite. We know that. Right. What does the Torah say about Moabites?
They're good.
They may not join your kehillah, which means they can convert. They can be counted in the minyan. But they have the halachic equivalent of a mamzer. Which means, they can't marry a Jewish man. A Moabite man can't marry a Jewish woman. Okay? And the Torah has, that's Amon Moab. And the Torah says about a Mitzri and an Edomite. Right? Remember it says, until the three generations of conversions, then they can marry Jews. Right? But an Ammoni and a Moabi and a Mamzer, no. Okay? So how can we appoint a king from a descendant of Moab? The Gemara in Yevamos, the Ayin Dalet, says that this question came up even before he was crowned king. Actually, before anybody knew he was crowned king, he was crowned king already. Shmuel, but that was secret. Right? Where did the question of his lineage come up? Because the king said, whoever kills Goliath gets to marry my daughter. And Shaul did not give the daughter over to David after killing him. Wow, that's bad form, isn't it? How are you going to get someone to do something that no one wants to do if you don't come through? Right? To Gemara, why didn't Shaul give the daughter to another man? A in this course, if someone can tell me in the next 5 seconds, what's the name of that man?
The name of what man?
The name of which man?
Man. Time's out. Adriel Hamachor.
Adriel,
I was going to say that.
He was a question on National Video in 2018.
Really?
Yeah.
Adriel Hamachor. Okay. All right, So The Gemara says that Shaul actually, when after he killed Goliath, he turns to Avi and says, "Ben Mizana." He didn't say who is he. He knew who David was. David had been playing harp for him for some time already. He knew who David was. He said, "Oh, wait a second. Did I hear that he's the son of someone who's the grandson of the Moabite? Well, what's going on here?" So now Shmuel is in a quandary now, because Shmuel had already crowned him king. So Shmuel has a big problem. The word is spreading around that this man, this kid, can't marry my daughter because he's descended from a Moabite. But now Shmuel knows that, how is his kingdom going to start if there's a sizable amount of people supported by the current king, right? That believes he can't even enter the kingdom. Can't marry a Jew. His kids can't marry Jews. How's that going to work? So Hashem tells Shmuel, "I want you to write a book that traces his lineage. Trace the lineage from the people in the book, who they come from, how David's related to them, and that people in the story also have their doubts." That's very strategic on Shmuel's part. He writes in the story regarding the opposition. What's the name of the man who opposes? You said it.
Tov/Plomi Almomi.
We see the opposition in the book, that someone does not want to marry her. Pen ashchis es nachlosi. You got me? Come on with me, okay? Right? The opposition is in the book, but someone else with more authority held the day. His name was
Boaz.
Okay? If Boaz was willing to marry her, then it must have been with authority. Okay? You know, when she gives birth, there's no sign of Boaz. There's women, Ruth is talking, Naomi is talking. Even the terminology for how she becomes pregnant is very unusual. It says, "Vashem nosan lahi rayon." Shabbos, that's what Hashem does for everybody. Yeah, he was an old man. She was already old. It was miraculous that this led to a conception. And he died that night, says the Midrash. He disappeared because he, as a punishment for ramming through this halacha too quickly. No one knew this difference. Why should we differentiate between men and women of Moab? Where did Boaz get this halacha that there's a female mamzeres marry into the kehillah? Why should we differentiate? Have you heard an answer to that? Yes?
That's because the avera of Boaz was perpetrated by men, that the other ones who pushed it, and therefore the other ones were liable.
The avera of the Mitzri and the Edomite, men and women were equal. The avera of the Amalekite is equal for men and women. The Avera for the Mamzer involving the Mamzer and the Mamzeris is equal. What's the difference between the Ammonite and the Moabite? Please, you have something to add to this?
I believe in, I don't know if it's more of the Midrash, but the Midrash that it says that the woman would not, the sin that gets them excluded was that they did not come out to assist the Jews when they were like coming from Ephraim, and the woman would not have been responsible for doing that.
Okay, do you know a story in Bereishis where someone also goes out to greet strangers with bread and water?
Avram
in Parshas Vayera. So here's the pillow. Get ready.
And strap in the people that come straight up ask where is Sarah because she obviously was not coming out.
Yes! That's the Chidush HaRim. Beautiful. I shared this once with Nechama Leibowitz, and she said, "This gave me such pleasure, this Chidush HaRim." And it's the Gera Rebbe, and she apparently wasn't learning the Chassidish commentaries. So she's got a Seder in her apartment. She lived right behind the central bus station in Shemaya. Very, very modest apartment. So the Malachim said, when they came into the house, said, "Ayesor Ishtecha," which looks like very, you know, an Avram should have said, "How do you know my wife's name?" Chidush HaRim says that's such a nonsensical, worthless conversation. He said, "Oh well, okay, let me tell you, she's going to have a baby. Why do you have to know where she is in order to tell this news?"
And if you want to know where she is, call her in and tell her Avram and Sarah together. If she's in the Ovel. Wouldn't it be nice that they should both hear this beautiful news? She had to hear it from the behind the door. Remember, she heard it from the curtain and she said it's a disbelief, right? So, okay. Mr. Booth got it. It's that they were actually testing. So this is actually, it's the Chiddush HaRib, which is the Gera Rebbe, but I think that this can be extrapolated from Rashi. Hear this out. But this is what the Chiddush HaRib puts together. Rashi, right after the angels leave, asks the question, why, where did they leave to? They went to Sodom, right? So, but the angels obviously waited to destroy Sodom because something else interrupts the story, which is the saving of Lot. But why? Why not just go, you left Abraham, now go to destroy Sodom, right now. When did they arrive in Sodom? It says, Lifnoseret, in the evening. When did they leave Abraham? Kichom Hayom, right? I'll say it was Pesach time. Whatever, that's a few hours difference. Why? Angels can snap their fingers and just get and go on warp drive and get to Sodom. Why did they have to wait? So Rashi asks this question. Rashi thought this was a pshat question. Why are they at Avram Kichom Hayom when they get to Lot in the evening? So Rashi answers, because there is a little story in between when the angels leave and when the stone is destroyed. What happens in between? Guys, someone paid a lot of money for you guys to go to yeshiva for 12 years before you got here. Avraham bargaining with God about how many people, how many righteous people may be able to. Remember, we did this when we talked about B'socha Ir. Remember, Ki Adami Tzadik Ba'oretz, right? If they're 50 B'socha Ir, maybe they'll influence all the others. Remember? So, in between, Rashi writes, the angels were instructed by God to give extra time to before you go to destroy Sodom. And the angel said, why should we spend so much time here with Abraham? Just let us get the job done. Let us tell him about Sarah. Well, we're moving on. Right? No, we don't need. No, but Abraham's going to be so upset if you don't need. You've got to make it look like they need. Abraham thought they were people. Right? Some of us should actually say they were people. They were prophets who knew what's going to happen to Sarah. Nothing in the story. They called on Hashem. They only called Malachim by Lot. They did miraculous things by Lot. Would they do miraculous by Abraham? They told him the future. So what? All right, but Chazal said they were angels. Okay. So Hashem says, listen, I need to give Abraham a few hours to pray on their behalf. So he says, why? Because he has a nephew there. His name is Lot. You know, he went there originally because the shepherds were fighting, and then after he was taken captive, he went back there. Right? Avram rejected Lot after that. And he said in chapter 15, I have no children. Who's inheriting him? My butler, Eliezer, domestic Eliezer. He shouldn't have said my nephew was inheriting me, God. I have no sons. By saying my butler, Eliezer, is inheriting me, that's an obvious rejection of Lot. Right? But Avraham still, not only, he's not beseeching for Lot. He doesn't say, God, but I have a nephew there, please don't destroy them. No, he just says, maybe if there are 50 righteous people there, right, you get it? Maybe they can turn things around, God. What thought does Avraham have in this race? He's a righteous man. Right? Got it? So the angels say, but what purpose? What purpose is Lot going to have? Right? Lot is not Abraham's descendant. So he said, yeah, but he's going to have two daughters who will produce two women, Rus Hamoavit and Naamah Ammonis. Anybody know what she did in Jewish history?
The mother of
the next king for all of Shlomo's wives.
Chavim is correct. To all of Shlomo's wives, he had 1,000 of them, the one that was the mother of the next king was not born Jewish. How do you like that? Naama Ha'amonis. Who knew? Right? So how is the next king Jewish? So the answer is, the God told, and the angels asked, for Moab, for Rus and Naama, you want to save Lot and his daughters? But what's the point? It says in your Torah, Lo Yavo Among Yom Ovi B'Kal Hashem. How are they going to join the kingdom? What purpose? God says, I know what you're thinking. What the Moabites and Ammonites, the group said about 10 minutes ago, they failed to do as we were leaving Egypt. We're only going to punish the men for that, not the women. We're not going to punish the women. Hear this out, hear it good, hear it straight. We're not going to punish the women of Moab and Ammon for not doing what we wouldn't expect them to do in the first place. Okay? Now, for the angels, and you just want to get on with your business, I don't want to wait here for Avram to plead on their behalf. I want to do my job, God. You push back, and you say, how would you push back at this point? God, what's the reason why you differentiate between men and women? Because women don't go out to meet strangers? How do you know that? Are you paskening? Lo b'shamayimi. You're not supposed to. How do you know? So the God says, it was touche. Go down to Avram's house. Can you make a test? So what was the test? We know. We see that Sarah didn't come out to greet you. But what, is she in the market? No, your neighbor Ono. It's not the way of women to go out to greet strangers. That's the code. That's what I shared with you on neighbors. Neighbors day. Okay? So the Can everybody see what you said? Okay, so the reason for writing this book is to establish in the minds of the populace that this marriage of David, this marriage of Ruth to Boaz, is acceptable. Okay, that's the reason. That's the real reason for writing the book. Along the way, you get this and that power. That's it, beautiful. Okay, I'm just going to do one last thing today. About the, you see, Dorei Shemot? There are 9 characters in this book.
Melech, Machlon, and Chilion, Naomi, Ruth, Boaz, Tuba, Plony Almoni. There's a 9th character that's not named, the Na'ar.
The lad who keeps talking to Boaz in chapter 2 about how Ruth came to be. Not me. Okay. Would you be able to categorize these 9 characters in 3 different ways? Try.
Enough my phone to you. You just bring them off as dead from the outset.
Okay, they die. Right? They're sort of non-existent. They just disappear into oblivion in the story. And these three are desirous. So, but here is, remember what Rav Zera said in Rus Rabba, power of chesed. These people do e-chesed. Now, I must tell you, the translation of chesed is hard to establish in Hebrew. The word describes such disparate elements in Tanakh. I think it's compassion, loving kind. I think downstairs, chesed. You look at that, right there. Look, turn around. See that? Can you see it from here?
Where are you at? Right
there, it's green. Right? It's really nice for this. It suffices for this, but it's. It's not. Chesed is that which breaks expectation. Compassion does not break expectation. I expect compassion. You can legislate compassion. You can legislate tzedakah, but you can't legislate chesed. Chesed is a burst of unexpected behavior. A That's why it describes in Sefer Vayikra this, the incestuous relationship between a brother and a sister. Do not marry your sister, that would be chesed. It would certainly not be compassion. Of all incests, that's the one. You know your sister best, better than your mother. That's chesed, that's crazy, that's insane. Right? Some beforeshim argue that the reason why the Torah had to call that incest chesed is because marriage to your sister was very common in the ancient world, especially in royalty. Egyptian pharaohs always married their sister. Roman Caesars married their sister. Hey, what was common in Israel was to marry your niece. Your much older brother's daughter was common. Rabbi Gamliel's brother married Rabbi Gamliel's niece. Rabbi Gamliel's daughter. Okay, so in a book that is dedicated to the power of chesed, if you are negative chesed, do you know what's going to happen to you? You die. In general, dying for not doing chesed is too harsh. But the whole point of this story is, now if they're doing e-chesed, we'll see when we open up the book, when we get back from Pesach, what is the e-chesed they're doing. These people do more than expected. We'll see, we'll look into that also. We do more than is expected. That's the definition of chesed. Tzedakah is not well translated in English as charity. It's righteous. I would say righteousness. But that also doesn't really capture it. The tzedek needs to be right and correct. Right? Not doing chesed generally does not make you wicked. But not doing tzedakah does. Right? The opposite of tzedakah is wrongious. Not just neutral. It's not charitable. Okay, he's not charitable. Tzedakah is legislated by the Torah. So not doing tzedakah makes you wrong. Get it? In modern society, you wouldn't say that someone who's not charitable is evil and wrong. Right? So doing more than what is expected of you is chesed. Right? And we'll leave it up to different societies to decide what is expected of you. The people here do, what would you call this? Orpah going back to her family in Moab, Tony Amoni rejecting Ruth, and the Nar speaking negatively about Ruth and introducing her to Boaz. What would you call this third category here, the middle one?
Apathy.
I think you're right describing them in general, but I guess they do exactly what's expected of the average person. Right? Or but why would any woman want to come with this mother-in-law back home? And Chazal sweetened that pot by saying that these two were both the daughters of
the king.
The king, yes. They do it with Hagar too, right? Hagar is the daughter of Paro. See, the daughter of Paro would rather be with a. Right? That's what Avram's a great man, but the daughters of the king would rather go home to Israel with Naomi than to go back to this putrid, fetid place called Moab. Right? And the Nar, what do you expect? He's a Moabite. There's no love lost between Moabites and Jews at this time. About the time this story takes place, the king of Moab, named Eglon, he's the guy who's, according to Chazal, is Ruth and Naomi, Ruth and Orpah's grandfather, the king, or forefather, or son, the king of Moab had just subjugated us for 18 years. Right? We don't love Moabites right now, which makes her return with Naomi all the more. So, what happens in a book dedicated to chesed, to someone who does the opposite of chesed? Sorry, Charlie. What happens to people who are just normal and do what's expected? You also disappear into oblivion. You don't die, but you just, you had a chance. You knew Rus. Right? Okay. what you did? Ptolemy Almoni had a chance to be the progenitor of Mashiach. He had first dibs.
Sorry. He didn't step up to the plate. With that, let's hope that the Yankees and Mets win today, and everybody have a good Chatzimaya. Is it Pesach?
No,
I just remember high school. I would have been in the stadium today in high school.
Why are you this part of the
day? It's right here. Walker Stadium. All right, so have a great Yom Tov, everybody.